Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Thursday. We are creeping and crawling towards another weekend of college football. We actually have a Friday game in the Pac-12 this week. But, of course, USC and Utah will face off in the Coliseum Saturday at 5 p.m. And I'm here with Keely Yore to talk all about that. Follow her on Twitter at Keely is my name. She's sitting right next to me. Keely, how you doing today?
Hello, Ryan. I'm doing well. Glad to be back on the podcast with you. Haven't chatted with you about USC football in a little bit.
It's been a little while. So we got to get back. We got to get back at it. And we're going to do that today. And we got tunnel vision tonight. So we got
a lot of talking today.
A lot of talking to get to. We got to talk. I did a bunch of Utah radio. Someone asked me, like, why are you doing so much Utah radio? Well, there's a lot of markets. Like, if you play Washington, Seattle's like a pro town. It's like LA. Like, it's just pro.
Yeah.
Utah is, you know, they talk about BYU. They talk about the Utes.
It's a big college football town.
Some jazz.
Or
yeah. I mean,
state, I would say.
Yeah. So, like, Salt Lake City on their stations, you know, multiple times. So,
nice.
It's a good one.
Nice.
Even like Colorado, like Denver's more of a pro market.
Yeah. Utah's always been pretty fun to talk about matchups with.
Yeah. Did Bill Riley show this morning.
He's
so
great.
He's awesome. We'll hopefully see him at the Coliseum. We talked about that a little bit. But if you guys want to drop us any questions, you know, any kind of concerns, what you want us to talk about, you can do that a number of different ways. Podcast at uscfootball.com is the email address if you'd rather email us. You can also call or text us at 424-254-9141. Hopefully there's no emergency podcast after this game, Keely. You know, listening to like 20 voicemails at 2 in the morning is not fun.
You just summoned that, but yeah, sure. Let's hope not. But at this point, what would constitute as an emergency? Anything, really?
I mean, like losing a game at home, like that's not an emergency anymore.
No, it would be the third of the season.
Even the last one probably was an emergency, but I got Gerard on for that was good.
That in itself is emergency.
Yeah.
Getting Gerard on.
We got him on. That was a pretty good one. But also, you can also get a hold of us. You can ask a question this way, but we just want to hear what you have to say. And have a little 5-star next to it. You know, the 5-star reviews on the Apple Podcasting app. And we got an incentive for you. The best one each week. We're going to send a Trader Joe's gift card for $50.
So,
yes, which is great.
It's the noise.
Boop, boop. I just came from Trader Joe's, Keely.
Nice.
My trunk is runneth over with Trader Joe's product.
Nice.
Yes, because we're having, you know, a little tailgate gathering for all the VIP members of USCFootball.com.
So, ayo.
I know. So come on out. Christmas Tree Lane. We posted the information about the tailgate on the Peristyle. Keely will be there. Shotgun. Chris Trevino. Lots of snacks and drinks.
Just come for the snacks alone.
The snacks are good. yeah, I bought some cool cookies. And
cookies.
Yeah. So thanks to Trader Joe's. They sent me some gift cards to pick up stuff for the tailgate. Last time they just like handed me a whole bunch of stuff. It was way too much food, by the way. So like it was a tailgate for like a million, maybe it would have been okay. But this is a more reasonable amount of food.
Okay.
Because we got to go into the Coliseum. And
we do.
We can't like stay there to the bitter end. But I think everyone had a good time at the last tailgate. So hopefully people come out again. But thanks to Trader Joe's for being an amazing sponsor. Bought some of my favorite, you know, the White Claws that are like my favorite flavor pack. I only bought those. So if people like other flavors, sorry. I bought my favorite. So,
okay.
Even though I can't really drink, but like.
Whatever works for
you. I'm telling you, like, these are the flavor pack number 3 for the White Claws. You can get them at Trader Joe's.
Which one is that one?
So it's like watermelon, raspberry. It's all a good one. There's no like lime or lemon and stuff. I forget what the other.
It's
strawberry.
Favorite. All the good ones.
Yeah, the good
not
berry ones.
Not very descriptive, but okay.
Yeah. Well, the ones that I like. I don't, you know,
sure.
Some of the ones.
That tells me nothing, but sure. That's
yeah.
Great.
White Claw flavor pack number 3. So check that out. And Trader Joe's has got piles of them. So
nice.
And I got some wine for the house. You know, you gotta have some house wine.
House wine
from Trader Joe's. But what do we got reviews? Why,
Keely? We have a couple new reviews. One is from Marbles28, who gave us 5 stars and said, best USC football coverage. Ryan and his team are the best. They have the best podcast and content about USC football. Thank you for that. And then we got one from Peter, who said, 5 stars, awesome coverage. Ryan and the team have really improved their game each and every season, hoping our Trojans follow suit. Mahalo for all you do. Fight on, Peter, 8789. So I believe he's Hawaiian.
I like the Hawaiian stuff. Should we send a whole...
We're not done yet. We have more.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And then we have Joe, who left us 5 stars and said, simply the best. In a word, this is the best, all caps, USC podcast available. The entire team, including Trevino, adds value and insight into the happenings at USC. It's been refreshing to watch and listen to Keely mature from an intern to an integral team member. The content is first class, and the entire team calls it like they see it. Must listen for any USC supporter.
Ta-da. Well, it's good, too. But he mentions Chris Trevino, so I don't know if he just disqualified.
No.
I'm just kidding. I don't know which one.
Do you I don't feel like I can weigh in on this one because
you were like complimented.
I was complimented, so it's kind of biased.
We'll go with that one.
No, well, what about the Mahalo?
I like that one too.
This is horrible. we're not very decisive about this. It's hard. What if we give them both one?
Yeah. What you guys both write us in. Send me an email, ryan@uscfootball.com, and we'll take care of you with the Trader Joe's gift card because we didn't give away one last week.
Yeah, there we go. See,
we didn't do the show.
Boom, perfect.
So, who are the reviews from again?
I already clicked out, but I believe one is Peter. Yes, no, yeah, Peter and Joe.
Okay, Peter
Shouts
and Joe.
To Peter and Joe.
Shoot me an email with your address, and I will send you snail mail a Trader Joe's gift card for $50, and you can go out and buy some cool stuff like I did today. Like my trunk is literally full of Trader Joe's stuff.
Nice.
Good stuff. Okay. Well. Keely.
Yes.
Interesting week of practice.
Indeed.
We saw some Jackson Dart.
We did for the first time.
He had pads on, on his shoulders.
Yeah.
It wasn't like running around, like, you know, making plays, but.
No, yeah. That was a little misleading because once you say he's back, people are like, oh my God, he's running the second team offense.
So was he starting? Like, you know,
no.
Obviously, he just took the first team reps in practice, right? No, that didn't.
No. This was the first time we saw him in full pads, basically, since he tore his meniscus at Washington State. He's still gimpy. He has, people are calling it a robo leg because he has such a thick brace on his knee. Still can't do any planting or cutting. He's only doing like light throws during the routes on air portion of practice. So basically the wide receivers or any of the receivers will run routes without being covered. And it's kind of just like a lob a little bit.
We saw Mo Hassan throwing those. We saw Graham Harrell throwing those.
You're not like planting your leg. You're not dropping back. You're not doing anything like that. So he's getting some throws in, but when there's any type of like actual movement involved, he's just watching or he's on a trainer's table getting ice. So Dante Williams said this week that he's not medically cleared yet, still has a ways to go. I mean, some people are like,
he's
maybe he could come back for Notre Dame, and still, I don't know, it just doesn't look like he can move that knee very well. And given the state of everything, I don't think it's worth rushing back. Now I can tell and have heard from the Dart camp, they're really trying to get him back as fast as possible. And that was the decision to have the meniscus surgery.
He
had it right away. Yeah. So they are trying to rush him back. And I think that just speaks to the competitor that he is. But I think in the grand scheme of things, it would make more sense to just really make sure that knee heals properly so that you're not dealing with this later down the road. Or when you are the guy, you know, when Keenan Slovis is gone and you're fighting for that starting spot or whatever, rather than trying to play in this season when, in the grand scheme of things, doesn't really matter.
You don't want to Porter Gust in this thing.
Yeah, right? Compared to your knee health in the long run, you know? So, you know, it's one of those things where you have to balance being a competitor versus being healthy. And that's something that overall USC has struggled with its star players. You know, like you mentioned, Porter Gust, Juju Smith-Schuster, they rush guys back. Now, I don't think they specifically rush them back on their own prerogative. I think a lot of the players are competitive and want to come back, but I think it's up to the program to look at the big picture and say, hey, it's smarter for you and for us in the long run if you just really take your time in rehab rather than rushing back for what, you know? So I get it. He's a competitor, but you just hope just for him that he's not pushing it too much.
Yeah, no, completely makes sense there. We'll see what happens. I think there's a chance with this weekend and then the bye week, you know, it'll be 2 weeks or whatever, you know, heading into Notre Dame. He could make the trip and potentially be the backup again. But I don't know. Like you said, you don't want to rush anything. And there's no reason, you know, you're the backup quarterback. Like, there's no
reason. Yeah, it's not like the door's open to be a starter, you know. Right. For all we know, Keaton is the starter and he's just rushing back to be the backup.
Now, if USC follows the suit and gets thumped at home by a Pac-12 opponent, then there's going to be like, hey, you know, you got to go to the future. You got to go to the next guy. Is Jackson Dart ready? You know, they were calling for Miller Moss. Like,
And I don't agree with the calls for Miller Moss, considering that he hasn't actually played football in 2 years and he's still a true freshman. Like,
he handed the ball off once.
He handed the ball off once, yes, but there's a lot more that goes into it. And it's just unfortunate that people are just writing off, you know, the experience that Keaton Slovis has in that sense. But yeah, we've seen Dante Williams. He's very willing to change things up when things need changing. We saw that this week in practice for the 12 penalties that USC got on Saturday against Colorado. The entire program had to run 12 sprints after practice. We didn't get to see it, unfortunately, which I wish we could have, because that's always interesting to see. But apparently even Chief of Staff Brandon Sosno ran the sprints.
I would pay to see that.
So apparently it was a whole like team bonding program. Like, it was still a punishment, but it was kind of a bonding thing in a sense, just because, you know, you're all suffering together. And then on Wednesday, you know, the team had its normal warm-ups. You know, Wednesdays are a little flat to begin with, just because the parents aren't there. It's kind of just, I don't know, business as usual. But Dante Williams was not impressed or pleased with how the team came out. And right after warm-ups finished, he called everyone together, staffers, basically the program who's on the field, and tore into them, basically saying, like, you're flat as F, like, you guys, like, need to act like, yeah, he's calling out the leaders of the team to lead better, stuff like that. So they really pumped it up. And the interesting thing, too, is that we heard from the defensive players after Wednesday's practice that they needed that, you know, they need someone to call them out on their BS, you know, they need someone to do that. And that's what we've been saying for years, Ryan. I feel like there's a reason.
No one was calling them out.
There's a reason why a coach is a coach. It's your analogy you use all the time, Ryan, about like you go to your uncle's house and you have a ton of candy all the time. It's fun in the beginning, but then you feel awful, you know?
Right.
It's like that, where there needs to be discipline, there needs to be accountability. And to Dante's part, he's been checking off the easy things that you can check off as a interim head coach, you know, full pads Tuesday, Wednesday, changing up the routine, not being afraid to do that. And he even talked about it today in the Thursday morning press conference. They're changing their home routine. And he said how in a normal home schedule, they will do a walkthrough in the Coliseum, come back, shower, have a little bit of off time, and then go to the buses, and then go and then do a walkthrough in the morning, usually in the lobby of the hotel, and then go to the Coliseum. And he said, you know, I feel like we're more locked in on the road. So we're mimicking what we do on the road. So they're going to do a walkthrough, take a shower at JMC, and then bus over to the hotel and eat at the hotel, do all that stuff. And then they're actually going to go and do a walkthrough at a high school in the morning instead of just trying to do it in the lobby. So they're changing things up. And that was interesting, considering we had also heard from players following Wednesday's practice, because we were asking, you know, what's the difference? Why are you just laying eggs
at home
at the Coliseum? And the sentiment we heard was that, you know, we just seem more locked in. We seem more focused. And so to hear Dante say how he's changing things as well, I thought was interesting. So, I mean, props to Dante, doing everything he can. And, I mean, in light of what he said on Trojans Live on Monday, his father passed away last week.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unbelievable, man. Just strength to be able to handle just a huge transition and also have something devastating like that happen. I mean, it's very admirable. And, you know, he's doing the best he can. And he talked about even when he first took over the job, he doesn't have that much time. You know, he's not having that much time. And then to have something like that happen, that's just so much to process. So,
yeah, I mean, that's normally, you know, your father passed away, that's taking a lot of your time, you know.
Yeah.
Had
yeah.
a friend of mine, her father passed away recently, and it was like consuming her. Like, she basically stopped working, you know. And
yeah, I mean,
he doesn't have that option right now.
No, I mean, the fact that he's still pushing through, and the fact that we weren't able to detect that something that serious had happened from him and his demeanor is just insane. I mean, and he mentioned after Tuesday's practice that part of the reason why he made the move from Oregon to USC was because he got to be closer to home and be with his father. So he thanked Mike Bone, Brandon Sosna, Clay Helton for giving him the opportunity to be closer with his dad in the last years of his life. But still, the timing is just unreal. And so obviously our hearts and our condolences go out to the Williams family, but just a hectic, crazy time for Dante Williams and his family.
That very, very crazy. And we, like I said, prayers going out to his family. I mean, big reason he came by, you know, his dad was struggling health-wise and he could be closer to him for a while. So good for him. That was kind of a little shotgunny rant for you. That was a lot of topics on
this. Is what happens when we don't do tunnel vision. I just like went for it. I just had a lot to
say.
Had
a lot to say. Yeah, it's cool. Well, one of the things you mentioned, and it's funny, and this is always like a common theme for me, that he came in and was like, oh, we're going to do full pads on Wednesday. It's take care of the low-hanging fruit.
Oh, yeah.
And we saw the same thing with Mike Bone and Brandon Sosna.
Yeah.
We're going to see the same thing with George Kliavkov at the Pac-12. When you have horrible leadership, they make a lot of bad decisions. So then you get someone that's half decent,
yeah,
maybe good, maybe great. I don't know, but better than suck, you know, like better than butt, better than.
Oh, you know. My God. Speaking of which, I have a lot of inquiries that I need to follow up with you on Stanford status as butt.
Oh, we'll do. Yeah, we'll get to
we'll
that.
We'll get to that. I just want to say.
For sure. Yeah. You know, I talked about it in the podcast of champions, but no pun intended. So you have this poor, if you're following a very poor leader, Larry Scott was awful, you know. Pat Hayden, Lynn Swann, awful. Clay Helton, love him as a person, awful head coach, right? So you could come in and fix things and just do like, oh, by the way, why don't we have someone that focuses on athletic fields cut the grass for our practice field instead of the guy that cuts the library grass? Oh, why don't we move the FCS school that we had scheduled, we've never scheduled ever,
yep,
to somebody else and figure that out? I mean, just the kind of things that you're like, obviously, duh, we should do that. And Dante Williams could come in and like, you know, the team's not being very tough. Well, let's go an extra day of full pads, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You just kind of do those things. So at least for someone that's never been a head coach, there's things that if they put you or me at the head coaching position, we would have probably made those moves too, you know?
Yeah, just by being around the program.
Yeah. Just like, yeah, they need to do this. Like, you got to do some different stuff, especially the routine. It was like 6 years of routine that would never change, you know?
Yeah.
And that you had to change something, like literally just flipping a switch and just do the opposite of that, and that. Things could probably get better. Not even know what the terms are. Don't even know what they are. Just like, just do that different. And it's probably going to be better than what you had. So it's set up. I think it was set up well for Dante Williams to at least make an impact, like kind of right away.
Well, that was what was refreshing hearing from him this morning, just saying like, we'll change whatever needs to be changed in order to make our team better. And that's not something we heard for the last 6 years. It was like, no, our routine is good. Routine helps us. It, you know, that was just something we kept hearing even when the results
were
coming.
Game plan. Like, no, you didn't.
Yeah. So just, I mean, honestly, just hearing something different in that sense is refreshing to report on. So, I mean, even, you know, just saying, hey, Dante Williams called out the team at the start of practice. It's refreshing to report on because it was just so much of the same over and over and over again. And I know Shotgun says this all the time, but when you have 18 to 23-year-olds, 30, if you're including Ben Griffiths, you got to change things up. You know, you got to make things different when things aren't working. And Dante Williams seems very willing to do that. So that's at least a credit to him.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem like that's that difficult to do, but it apparently is because we just haven't seen much of it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Little other news stuff. When I was there Tuesday, saw Max Williams going through some drills in pads.
That's not some of the necessarily new. We saw that last week as well. But
oh, he did it? Okay.
Yeah. But he's been rehabbing really hard. I turned to Chris yesterday during practice and I said, he just looks too good for someone who tore their ACL a couple months ago. Like, he is just a rehab warrior. And so, I mean, it kind of sounds like they're trying to get him back before the end of the season, which would be interesting.
That would be interesting.
But he's moving really well.
Yeah, it's one of those guys, like, sometimes people are rehabbing and you're sort of out of sight, out of mind. You don't really see what they're doing, or they're maybe on rehab island. But, like, he was front and center doing whatever he was doing all the time. Like,
yeah,
getting one-on-one care, like, doing a lot of planting and cutting and, you know, just really trying to push his knee as much as he could. You know, I guess medically, how much you would want. But to see him kind of going through some of the DB lines, that was great to see. I mean, he's just a kid that's USC, okay, you recruit dudes that are like, and I don't think they, like, some of the, I think it was Ronnie Bradford, like, didn't really want you know, Max Williams. He wasn't the tallest guy or whatever. But sometimes you just have to get dudes that are like, you can tell they're just tough as nails, love football.
All heart.
Play. Like, yeah. And like, you're, you know, I was listening to one podcast. I forget what it was. I think it was a, something about like Luke Fickell when he recruited like James Laurinaitis to Ohio State, who wasn't like highly ranked, but the guy's like, he was a wrestler. He's just like tough, you know, just like built of sinew and muscle. And you're just like, okay, we'll make him a great football player. Obviously he, you know, ends up being a great football player. Apologize. I forget where I heard. I've listened to so many podcasts lately. I forget where I heard that one. But you want a guy, and that's who Max Williams was, or someone that just kind of grew up around USC, loved it.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, he's not the tallest DB in the world, but man, he just makes plays all the time. Like, he's a football player. Yeah. Get him out. And I mean, the fact that he gets hurt and you just see how hard he, just a warrior there. Like, then you're like, okay, we recruited the right guy. You want that guy.
Well, I forgot who said it, but someone on the defensive staff said, if I could have a whole team of Max Williams, I would have them. You know, that's a credit how hard he plays, how hard he rehabs. I mean, like, the work ethic is there. And so obviously he's a guy you root for just as someone who watches practice and watches guys work. And yeah, so we'll see. It looks like he's getting closer.
Yeah. So good. I mean, good kid. We hope to see him back here at some point. What's his redshirt? Do you know off the redshirt status off the top of my head?
I don't know. Especially with the whole COVID shirts.
Yeah. So last year doesn't count. But, like, if he came back, it would probably be the end
of
the season.
He's a redshirt sophomore.
So he redshirted once, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So you don't need to worry about that. But, all right, do you want to – I got some advanced stat stuff, but do you want to do the butt stuff? So what are you hearing? That's
the worst phrase you've ever said on this podcast.
Are you sure? Because I've said a lot of weird
stuff. Yeah, that was pretty bad. So Stanford beats Oregon.
True.
A little questionable. Calls and whatnot. Granted, this was during I was getting ready for Colorado, so couldn't see the whole game. But
untimed down at the end on a kind of bogus holding call.
But. You have infamously said that Stanford is butt.
Yeah.
And now people want me to call you out for it and get your thoughts.
Oh, I've done that on the podcast of Champions.
Yeah,
plug.
But you,
check it out.
You said it on this podcast.
I have said it on this podcast too. I would say. First of all, my picks against the spread this year, which are normally very good, have been butt. Like, this is like weird COVID year hangover.
It's like a 9-year-old vocabulary.
They're bad. Okay.
Okay.
Just terrible. Like, from week to week, I've been pretty good at USC. You're undefeated picking USC.
Yes, and I'm so stressed for this week. The line is 3.
It's 3 points, yeah.
And USC, Utah, usually is like a 4-point situation.
Yeah, either way, yeah. I think I'm 3-2 picking USC, so I've done all right picking USC. But, like... There's just, you know, oh, Stanford's good. They're bad. They're, you know, the problem is the entire Pac-12 isn't good. And we know two things about the Pac-12. We know Arizona's awful.
Yes.
And we know Colorado's awful. And I did pick those teams to be like 1-10 and 2. Like, people were mad, or 1-11. I think Arizona had 1-11, and I'm not going to get there. I don't think they're going to get there at one win. I think I had Colorado like 2-10, but I also had Stanford that bad too. And they're certainly not anywhere near as bad as I thought, but they're not, I don't think they're good. Even RJ, you know, Abadia, who's covered Stanford for a long time, I asked him straight up and he's like, no, I don't think they're good. And,
yeah.
Who's the best quarterback in the Conference of Champions? Like, who's good?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Is it Jaden Daniels? Like, he looked better, but he's only played like one team. Like, they really had a
there's no consistency.
Tomato can schedule. Like,
yeah.
DTR, like, he could go away. Like, I like Chance Nolan up at Oregon State, but he threw for 48 yards against Washington. I mean, Keaton Slovis has had 3 pick games. Like, is he still the best quarterback? Like, there's not like 2, 3, 4 elite quarterbacks in the Pac-12. And I think when you don't have that, when the Pac-12 is good, usually you got like there's a whole bunch of elite quarterbacks, and we're not seeing that right now. Oregon, you know, it's an amazing win to get that win over Ohio State at the Shoe. Like, they've looked. I mean, I don't want to say it again. They've looked bad. Like, they've looked really bad since then.
Yeah.
I mean, Washington's offense is like painful sometimes. You know, like not like Colorado painful.
Yeah.
They got Sean McGrew running the football now. Bosco kid. He's like 5'3" and a half or whatever, but like awesome to watch him run. He did a lot of Wildcat stuff if you watch Washington. They're better now, but like John Donovan's just a horrible offensive coordinator. I mean, Cal, oh my God, how bad are they? Like, I love Chase Garbers. Like,
it's your guy.
They're awful. Like, they scored 6 points against Washington State.
Like, do you think Wilcox is on the hot seat?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't see him. I mean, but the problem is, like, he's probably got $8, $10 million buyout. Like, do the people even care at Berkeley, like, to get rid of him? I don't know. But they hired, who'd they get? I forget their offensive coordinator. He's awful. You know, it's just, yeah, like, Stanford probably wouldn't have won if there was, like, one of 10 things happened, you know, like Joe Moorhead doesn't get surgery.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they don't get this weird holding call at the end of the game for untimed down.
Yeah.
Verdell goes out with an injury.
But then you can argue, like, if you're a good enough team to beat Ohio State on the road, you shouldn't even put yourself in that position.
Yeah, but that's the problem. No one is good enough to, like, no one is good enough to overcome, like, pretty much any adversity. Like,
sure.
If Stanford's, like, someone gets a head cold, you know, like, they're like, oh, there's, like, half the guys got the flu on the offensive line. They're going to lose. Like, the margins of error are just so small because the Pac-12 is pretty much hot garbage. It's just not bad. It's bad. And so
Yes. It's
Stanford, but they are not. But they are a competent team.
Are you reversing your position?
No, right? Yeah, 100% I'm wrong.
Okay,
like,
wow.
But they're not good.
You heard it here first, folks.
But they're not good. Like, they're like better than – like, it's everything else dropped. I thought Stanford would drop. I think they've dropped, but they're not, like, super low. Other teams like Cal, like Colorado, holy crap. I mean, I called that one, and people were giving me a lot of crap because they were 4-2 last year. They're like, oh, look, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, no, they're going to be awful. And I nailed that one. Like, they are bad.
Yes. Their offense.
Who, you know, the most points against a Power 5 opponent or a FBS opponent. 14 against USC. Like, that's the most points.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, overall.
The biggest pass play of the season came against USC. Like,
yeah. They haven't, the only teams that have scored less than them are like Army and Navy, I believe. It's crazy.
I mean, and like the points per, like, if you look at advanced stats, for like, they are just.
It's bad.
It's bad. So for all the Stanford, like, people want to like harp on that. Like, hey, I told you Arizona, I told you Colorado. I thought Stanford would be closer to them, and they are not. They're closer to the top of the conference than the bottom. But the problem is the top of the conference has dropped down, too. There's just not that much good there. Okay.
I heard you had some stats for us,
yeah,
Mr.
So
Abraham.
I'm not a huge, like, as a former engineer with an engineer brain, you would think that I would, like, be just all over the advanced stats stuff.
You would think so.
And it's like some of the, like, I don't know if it's just the people that do it, because I feel like...
Taking shots.
Well, no, I mean, I like Bill Connolly.
Yeah, Bill C.
I started listening to the Sharp College Football guys, and they do the Beta Rank. I like them. But sometimes when people, like, try to speak in advanced stats language, it's like they just kind of assume that you're all consumed by this stuff, and they'll start acronyms going off the wind, you know, just all over the place. I'm like, can you, like, tell me what this means first? And even some of the explanation stuff, like, if you're like, what does this mean? And it's not, I mean, it just seems like it's very, like, and I'm, you know, I studied a lot of calculus over the years. Like, I don't want to do that anymore. You know, like, I've moved on from that part
okay.
of my life.
Okay.
But there's some interesting things there. I like, there's certain stats I like. There was, like, a stuff rate or something where it's like, you know, if you're coming through, it's more of like an offensive line stat. So, like, the first 4 yards of a running back's rush, they'll give credit to the offensive line. So, like, if there's 10 rushes from the running back and he goes for like 5, 6, 7,
yeah,
4, 3, you know, then the offensive line's doing their job. But if he goes like 5, -1, 6, 0, like, the stuff rate's going to be on the offensive line. And so it's like, how often is that going on? But anyway, I'm not going through any like super crazy stuff. By the way, Beta Rank has Colorado as the 114th team in the country. Offensively, 125th. Yeah, so they are really bad. By far the worst offense in the Pac-12.
So in that sense, Colorado was what the doctor ordered for USC to kind of like bounce back. But I don't think you take much away from that game.
True. And the Beta Rank stuff, they actually kind of rank the schedule. So I'll do the Beta Rank stuff first. So this is Sharp College Football. You can Google it. So as a team, they have USC ranked 45th in the country. So number 45.
Okay.
But 5th in the Pac-12. Utah, they're not as high on. 61st in the country and 8th in the Pac-12. But if you look at the overall schedule, USC has the last ranked schedule in the Pac-12. So, like, they're, you know, because San Jose State's in the hundreds.
Yeah.
Washington State's, I think, in the hundreds. You know, Colorado's in the hundreds.
So. I mean, we thought USC would come into this, to the bye week, undefeated.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy.
The two teams they lost to are actually better than people thought, but the teams that they've beat are all pretty awful. Like, we thought San Jose State might be pretty good, and they're not. Utah's schedule was ranked eighth. And they've only played four games, so I think a lot of these numbers start to make more sense like a few more games into the season. But offensively, USC is a lot better than Utah, 26th and 3rd in the Pac-12, and Utah is 61st and 6th in the Pac-12. In general, Utah is a better running team. USC is a better passing team. It's like, duh. Okay, that makes sense. You know, like,
duh.
There's nothing like profound there. Defensively, USC is pretty bad. 94th in the country, according to BetaRank, and 9th in the Pac-12. Utah's middle of the pack, 63rd.
What is this based on, though?
And 5th. So there, you can Google, like, there's a big, long explanation and stuff. But
okay.
So they take, like, you know, they rate all the offenses, all the defenses. There's a lot of, I mean, I like that. I mean, when you listen to the guy, it sounds like he knows what he's talking about and stuff. And it's a different approach. If you, Bill, and we'll, I'll go over Bill Connelly's stuff in a bit.
So basically, it's what you said you don't like. Reading.
I like someone else do it. That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. And I could get into it, but I just need someone to be like, just, you got to start the layperson. Like, as a former engineer, sometimes we, like, a lot of times engineers aren't the best, like, public speakers.
Yeah.
And part of my job as an application engineer is I would give presentations and demos and things
like that. You were the unicorn.
I would get up in front of people and you had to, like, and sometimes you would hear engineers talk and it was like open up a novel and starting on page 85 and just start reading. And you're like, can you give me some context of what's going on here? Like, they just jump right in.
Okay.
And I feel like some of the advanced stuff is just like, blah, 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 blah. Like, okay, hold on. Give me big picture first and then show me what the nuts and bolts are.
Okay.
For defense, USC's 94th, 9th, Utah 63rd, 5th. Utah's better against the pass, so they have a better secondary. That's, you know, USC's strength. And USC's been a little bit better against the run, but they're kind of bad at everything. So, I mean, there's some bigger numbers in there, like Oregon State's of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Special teams wise, they have USC as 7th in the country, number 1 in the Pac-12.
Look at that.
And Utah, who's normally good at special teams.
Pretty good.
They're not good.
Okay.
They're 10th in the Pac-12, 38th in the country. But overall, if you look at all their numbers, they have USC as an almost 5-point favorite, 4.84 favorite over Utah. So, according to BetaRank, that spreads 3, you should take USC because they think USC's actual – his numbers show USC is a little bit bigger favorite than what the actual spread is.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah. Look at the S&P Plus. It used to be S&P Plus.
I know. It was one of the
Plus. And. That's Bill Connelly. So this is a ESPN Plus deal. It's weird. His rankings are completely different. So they use different formulas, different, you know, criteria. And again – a few more games in the season, the more data you have, the better, you know, the better of a model it's going to be. But USC, he has as the 23rd best team in the country. I'm sorry, Utah is the 23rd best team in the country. So Utah higher than USC.
Okay.
They have the 56th ranked offense, the 10th ranked defense, and the 121st special team. So I think it makes sense where they have Utah's, you know, offense. BetaRank kind of has Utah's offense and defense similar, like middle of the road. SP Plus has Utah's defense ranked pretty high. So,
okay.
You know, we'll see. The 10th in the country and 56th overall in offense. For USC, they have the 34th ranked team in the country. So a little bit below. And there's, I think, UCLA and Oregon are all in between USC and Utah, like in the high 20s, low 30s. USC's offense is 14th in the country. The defense is 62nd. So he has the defense a little bit better, but still not very good. And he has the special teams 30th in the country. So, you know, upper half. So both rankings seem to think USC has pretty good special teams and Utah's is not very good, which is kind of weird. So he puts his model out, though, to pick the game score.
Yeah.
Get this. So he has USC at 27.22 points, and Utah at 27.21 points.
Oh,
so within 0.01 of each other. So Bill Connolly says take the points because he calls this an actual coin flip.
Wow.
So it depends which ranking you like.
Oh, no.
I know.
This is not good for my future pick.
And the FPI, which is also like an ESPN thing, they have USC as a 61.9% favorite in this one.
Interesting.
And with a three-point line. So I think two of them would say USC is more than a three-point favorite. So
okay.
I'm picking USC in this one anyway. We got to get your picks on it because we put them all together. You got undefeated streak on the line.
I know. So. I hate being undefeated. So much pressure.
You hate it?
Is this what the Pete Carroll teams felt?
No, they wouldn't cover spreads a lot. They would.
I'm just saying when they had their
like the 34 game winning streak.
Like, so stressful. I'm just kidding.
There's a lot of stress. Yeah. So I mean, I don't know how much you get out of that stuff, but it's some of the stuff's kind of interesting.
First of all, proud of you for doing work before the podcast. I know that's
you like that?
Not your thing. So well done.
Just like come in and just.
Yeah, I was very surprised, but well done. What I'm curious about is you mentioned to Dante Williams this morning in 2019, that was the Matt Fink YOLO ball game. Basically, Utah was very stubborn, wanted to play USC in man the whole time. Obviously, when you play USC in man, the wide receivers win out because they're just more talented. Do you think we're going to see that from Kyle Whittingham again?
You know, I asked him that, and Dante Williams said, we've seen some games where they played more zone, others when they played more man. The fact that USC doesn't have four NFL wide receivers like they did in that Matt Fink game, because you had Michael Pittman, you had Amon-Ra St. Brown, you had Tyler Vaughns, and you had a young Drake London.
Yeah.
It's a little different trying to cover all those guys man-to-man as opposed to, we can double up Drake and let's see if Taj Washington or Gary Bryan or whatever can do something.
Yeah.
So I could see them going with more of a man coverage, but they sort of fold things over to Drake London's side of the field.
Bracket,
whatever you want to do. I could see that happening because they seem to like to do that. But that's going to be something that will be, fun to watch. I also want to watch Utah's offensive line has been pretty terrible. Like,
really?
USC has 8 sacks on the season.
Yeah.
In 5 games, all of them have come in 2 of those games.
Yeah.
So that's can they get after the quarterback? Can they set the edge like Dante Williams? I think he was talking about that today. Or was it him?
He was talking about Tuli Tuipulotu coming off the edge, which we saw more of against Colorado. And I thought he was really dynamic off of the edge and gave opportunities for other guys like Drake Jackson and Jake Lichtenstein to come off to just make the plays. You know, I think that's the difference we saw. Obviously, Colorado's not a good opponent, but we saw multiple guys on the defensive line making plays so that someone was able to break through rather than being the Drake Jackson show where he has to do it all on his own, you know? So I think that definitely helps.
Yeah. So, I mean, can this defensive front do well against what Utah usually think you got some good offensive linemen? It's just not been a very good offensive line performance for Utah so far this year. But they've only played one conference opponent. They lost to BYU, they lost to San Diego State. That was a disappointing one to see there. But so we'll see. I think that's gonna be an interesting matchup. USC's defensive front, Utah's offensive line, and then the DBs, which probably the strength of Utah's defense against Drake London and company, and maybe the and company is going to make the determination of how successful this, this team is. But if we're seeing a couple picks from Slovis, if they're, Drake London has like 9 catches on 15 targets for 89 yards and no touchdowns, like that's not good,
Yeah.
They're going to need some big numbers from him, obviously.
Do we know the health of Utah's DBs right now? Because I know they're coming off the bye week, but apparently they were a little banged up.
Yeah. I talking to some of the Utah people, they don't get a lot of information from Kyle Whittingham on that. So I don't know. If it might be out there. I haven't seen it. I've looked it around
either,
for, yeah. So they don't get a lot of that, but just knowing that, and I think when I forget which question I asked Dante, no one was raising their hand, so I just asked him a bunch of questions. But he talked about there's guys that were like in the showers like a couple weeks ago, and now like you didn't see them out there, and now on film, and now you're going to see them likely in this game. So I think they're going to come back healthy. Also, another tragedy for Utah and basically right off coming off the field after the party after the Washington State game. Another player shot and killed. It's just like I mean, just senseless. And how does the team react to that? Yeah. Like, this is, you know, a very popular player on the team, you know, someone that, you know, was wearing, you know, Ty Jordan's number 22. They went to Mesquite High School and just, you know, from Mesquite, Texas together. It's like, ugh.
So tragic. Just awful.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, what are you going to do? We don't know. So, I mean, Utah could come out fired up because, you know, they're playing for their fallen comrade, or they're like, I don't want to play football. I mean, you just don't know.
Yeah, you really don't know. Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah. So, all right. Should we take a break and
sure,
do some questions or anything
questions?
Else?
Last point.
Okay.
Lots of praise for Max Gibbs this week. We saw him on one play against Colorado. Apparently, they misaligned him. So he came back to the sideline looking like disappointed in himself. And Todd Orlando made it a point to say, hey, no, you did everything you could. It was our fault for aligning you wrong. So apparently he's going to get more run. People are super happy about what he's been doing so far. I love him as a person and as a player transitioning. So that's just, to me, such a fascinating storyline. Just, you know, he has so much power. You know, the problem with him during, like, scout team offensive line stuff is that defenders were just too quick for him. But his power on defensive line is just crazy. Like, when we first saw him do that, we were like, did he just do that rep? Like, so that's at least fun to watch. So we'll see how that evolves.
I think it was last Tuesday. So we're the first part of practice, like the first 50 minutes, we can be on the field. And they're sort of like, they do that first, like, fast period where they're like,
fastball, you know, yeah.
The fastball period. And then, like, in front of me, and I'm not usually the first to notice something, but I noticed this one first, and I'm like, I think I was talking to Shotgun or something. I'm like, hey, Max Gibbs is putting on a defensive jersey, you know? And it was like, and Shotgun's like, well, he's not going to fit that over. Like, you need a big jersey. He had a number 61, but he had to, like, take the other jersey off and puts it on. We're like, oh, okay, he's probably just going to be going and doing, you know, the scout team drills because they need bodies inside. Like, they were having Toa Lobodon play linebacker. They needed people to, like, fill in some of the defensive spots for the scout team.
Yeah.
So you kind of thought that was going to be. And I think Chris put it in his ghost notes and we had to, like, take it out. Like, you were asked, like, hey, don't mention this. So
I asked because it was like, it seemed like a strategy thing and they're very quiet about those things. Yeah. So, yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know if anyone cared. He ends up, you know, getting in the game or whatever.
Yeah. But, so, like, now we can talk about it.
Yeah. Like, he's seen it. But that was interesting. I was like, oh, okay. I didn't realize it was going to be like, hey, we're going to use him. I thought it was just more of like, we're going to practice against him. He's not, you know, being like, you know, number 12 on the offensive line depth chart doesn't really help you. But
yeah.
He's still got to, like, lose some weight and stuff, obviously. It's, you know, he's working on his body and everything. But that's cool to come into a college game like that and, like, you know, play a role.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a role that USC needs. They don't just have that guy who can kind of just fill up some gaps up front. You know, that's partially why USC got gashed against Oregon State. So you just need a guy who can kind of, sometimes he takes up like three offensive guys.
Yeah.
Like, you got to triple team him. So, I mean, Stanley Ta'afu has done a great job just given the fact that USC's depth is so low. But I think Gibbs is an interesting solution. And again, something that Dante Williams was willing to look at and address to try and fix something, you know, make a change like that. So interesting.
Interesting stuff. Real quick, Aaron Lowe was the player from Utah, but there was someone was arrested this week for the shooting. So charged with aggravated murder, attempted murder, and felony discharge of a firearm. So, and I think Kyle Whittingham said no one's going to wear number 22 as long as he's there at Utah. So, you know, to lose 122 and then lose another. Just
I
like,
know.
Ugh.
Tragic.
But okay, why don't we take a quick break and we'll come back and answer questions.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back here. I want some, you know, you get it screwed up sometimes. Like, you say the wrong podcast, or like, back here on the podcast with champions. Like, no, we're not. This is the
Tunnel Vision and Family Feud. I mix up.
Mix them up sometimes?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've twice in the last 3 weeks, I've put the, you like, Peristyle podcast intro on the podcast of champions.
Oh, no.
And then I get a bunch of tweets and, like...
I saw them this week.
Yeah. And Dave, like, so Dave was, like, trashing. My co-host, Dave, who covers UCLA, was talking some trash about, like, the USC marching band. And they're tweeting us, like, oh, is that because he did that? And our intro has, like, the Georgia marching band in it and stuff. Playing
it
Conquest.
It was planned. I'm 30 chess, 40 chess.
Literally, like, it depends. His schedule's all over the place. So, like, sometimes... We're recording in the morning, and I got to get out of there. Like, I do my, like, Meals on Wheels deal, and I'm like, and you're scrambling. And, like, it's the same process of editing each show.
Yeah.
So, like, you just put the wrong intro in and record the right stuff. But, yeah. So, anyway, a little more how the sausage is made.
Inside baseball.
What do you got for questions, Keely?
Well, we have an email from Ray in Pasadena who said, the auditions are over. Coach Fickell is the guy. Get the big money people to open up their wallets. Ray in Pasadena.
Hey, Ray. Thanks for that. So you check out the site on uscfootball.com. Gerard Martinez a few days ago did a great recruiting insider piece on Luke Fickell, the Cincinnati head coach. So a lot of good stuff about his recruiting prowess and, you know, what he's done over his career and how, you know, how that could translate to USC. Brady McCullough for the LA Times, our, you know, friend of ours, we're acquaintances. I like him. I mean, I don't know. Are you friends? Do you not like Brady? Is that what it is?
Ryan.
I'm just kidding.
That's not true.
Brady's
you
a good
just
dude.
Do all these things to cause trouble.
I like to cause trouble. No. He's another Michigan man for the LA Times. He did a really long piece on Luke Fickell, went out there, talked to the family and everything. And if you can check that out in the LA Times. But, and you know, I think we put stuff like this in the war room too, like talking to people at Cincinnati. I mean, he's got six kids, a daughter that's like a junior in high school, a wife that loves their life there in Ohio. I mean, he just beat Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he might have too much success at Cincinnati. Like, they're going into the Big 12. For some people are like, oh, I don't want a group of five coach. I'm like, he's a legit coach. You know,
yeah.
Toughness. You know, he's someone that I think USC would want. And I think his personality would actually work. He can be funny. But it's not going to be easy. Just because Mike Bone hired him, if that's who they focus on and they want to get him, like, it, I don't think it's a guarantee that he would come. I mean, it's probably more likely he wouldn't than that he would, just from the life you would have to leave, the lifestyle, and that's important to people. And just, you know, you have six kids, like, you are rooted in that community. But yes, I think you can win a national, like, the whole point is, like, why would James Franklin leave Penn State? You could probably win a national championship at Penn State. You can't at Cincinnati. Like, you're not going to win a national championship. You can at USC. And it's an easier path at USC than Penn State. Only when Penn State was independent, maybe it was different. But you're like the number three brand in your conference, your division, you know. USC is the number one brand in two time zones. So it's a difference. The road to get there, if your aspirations are, I want to win a national title. I want to be the best college head coach in the country. And not necessarily those, you know, you could be the best college head coach and not win a national championship. Is that important to Luke Fickell? Brady didn't get to talk to Luke all that much. And, you know, there's a couple quotes. He's not going to say much about that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's going to come down to, do you want to win a national title and get make a good run at it? And Luke would have a better, you know, I mean, no chance where he is. And he would have a, you know, a decent chance at USC. And but yeah, I think he'd be an amazing candidate. I know people are going to poo-poo. The good thing is there's a lot of good candidates, at least some. And I feel confident that Mike Bone, Brandon Sosna are going to go after the right guys, where USC in the past wouldn't. They would go after the wrong guys for the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm. If you listen to this podcast at all for the last like year, we've said that.
Yeah. This is a situation where I would have no problem if they get turned down by three or four guys, because those all three or four of those guys would be great freaking candidates, you know, and that's why they're going after them. Luke Fickell, I think, would be great, but it might be way too hard to get him out of there if they feel like he's the best guy or number, whatever it is. So,
yeah, everything I've heard about Fickell, just asking around even before there was an opening, was that he's just very Ohio. Like, that's where he's been and that's where he's recruited. That's what he knows. And so I think the biggest hurdle would be, can he and would he want to come out to California and repeat that success?
Yeah.
And that I don't think I've gotten a real answer for yet.
He's personally not recruited the West Coast, but that you don't need that. I mean, Cincinnati doesn't really do much on the West Coast. You know, Gerard broke down where offers are from and, you know, who's been recruited and things like that. But he's done a good job of getting Midwestern offensive linemen. And Gerard was talking about, hey, he comes here, he would probably go back and get Midwestern offensive linemen. Now, his specialty has been, you know, at Ohio State, you go get the 4- and 5-star guy. At Cincinnati, you're getting the guy Ohio State doesn't want. And you're developing them. And he's obviously doing a great job of that. I think you can fix that where you get the 4- and 5-star guys, but do you weed out some of the maybe prima donnas that are overrated and you get the like high ranked 3-star guy, not because that's the only guy left, but because you think he's the James Laurinaitis, you know, he's the tough football player,
sure,
as opposed to, you know, he's the Max Williams who was a 4-star, but he's that kind of guy. And I think Fickell's been really good at identifying those kind of guys. But
it's kind of like the Clay Maguire theory about how he was able to do more with less at Washington State as an offensive line coach. Kind of like that, where you've been in an arena where you have to do more with less. And so he'll be able to identify in a better market the better players rather than just like the overhyped players.
Yeah. I think Mike Jinks kind of came in and was like, I never had running backs like this. Holy cow. Well, I don't even know what to do with these guys. Like, remember, like, when he came in, it was sort of like there's these big, strong, fast guys. Like,
yeah.
He never had dudes like that. Like, when you're like, so you got to have to figure that out too, you know, because I think Chip Kelly's screwing up by there's going to be low hanging 4- and 5-star guys that you could get. And he sort of was like, just not taking that approach and just like, no, I'll get all my kind of guys and stuff. And
yeah.
Chris Peterson was doing that. Washington's fine. But you're sitting in the hotbed of talent. You still got to grab some of those guys that are really ranked high.
Yeah. And Brett C. had a similar question from Knoxville, Tennessee. So just thanks for the input, but we're not going to read it for this week. Since we're on the topic of coaching hires, we got a question from, from Brendan from Longhorn Country, who says, Ryan, I know you're high on James Franklin. I ask what you think about his struggles on the offensive side of the ball. Multiple coordinators, offensive styles, and now running the air raid. This sounds all too familiar to me. I understand how he got them to the Rose Bowl and won the Big Ten, but Helton also got his team to that Rose Bowl. Franklin is definitely a better head coach, but to me, he has an all too similar temperament to Helton. Also, that specific team for Penn State had Barkley and McSorley, who were beasts, but he hasn't been able to capture that or recruit that level of talent consistently on a year-to-year basis. Your thoughts? Brendan from Longhorn Country.
Hey, Brendan, he's got the number one recruiting class in the country right now. Like I mentioned before, Vanderbilt was ranked at the end of the season 3 times. He coached there 3 years, and 2 of those times were when he coached there. I think if you're going to look at it, people are like, oh, he's got a losing record against top 10 teams. It's like, okay, most people do. Like, the thing is, when you're at USC, like that, you have to project, right? Like, you're not going to be playing Ohio State every year. You know, you're not playing Michigan and Iowa and stuff. It's going to be an easier road. It doesn't mean he's a slam dunk. I just think, I mean, you could do a hell of a lot worse than James Franklin. I think people that are poo-pooing him, I feel it's like mostly because of the stupid Rose Bowl. Like, people are like, no, it's not that, but it is. Like, he lost to Clay Helton. He has to be garbage, you know, and it's he's not. I don't know. Mike Bone might not like James Franklin at all. He might love him. I think it's one of those things where you're going to get – USC fans are going to get a great Christmas present under the tree. You know, you wanted the – Ralphie wanted the Daisy, you know, 100 shot, the, you know, BB gun or whatever. It's like everyone's BB gun is different, you know. But I think whoever they end up hiring, as long as they don't get turned down by like five or six dudes, it's going to be like Ralphie getting, you know, finding the – that package behind the desk and wrapping the, you know, unwrapping it and going, oh my God. Like, say it's Luke Fickell. Like, USC fans will wake up one morning and go, Luke Fickell's USC's head coach. Like, they hired someone who's really good at his job, you know, like, oh, when has this happened? You're like, they hired someone other people wanted, you know? They hired James Franklin. They took a blue blood, one of the top 10 programs of all time, and they took his head coach. Their head coach and brought him to USC. Like, amazing. Like, there's things like that. They're like, we've never seen something like that happen at USC before. So I think there's a lot of opportunities for, you know, a great hire. Nothing's guaranteed. Any one of those guys could fall flat on their face. They could have a worse record than Clay Helton. I mean, we don't know, but at least you go out and try to get the guy that is projecting to be, you know, a great head coach and projecting to move programs wherever he's coming from and take over what a lot of people feel is a sleeping giant and turn it back into a giant.
Yeah, makes sense. We had a question from, excuse me, Steve, USC class of 97, who said, hi, team. This question is for Keely and Ryan. When I saw the report that USC boosters reached out to Anthony Lynn about the head coaching job, I nearly spit out my coffee. Do other schools' boosters suggest terrible, terrible coaching hire ideas too, or is this unique to USC? If I see Jack Del Rio or Hugh Jackson's name floated by boosters, I will have to grab a Costco-sized bottle of Tums and head underground until this entire search is over. Do you have confidence that Mike Bone will be able to navigate all of the coaching hire advice, good or bad, that comes his way and make a good hire? Will he have the authority to make the hire he wants without boosters or the board of trustees meddling? Thanks and fight on, Steve, USC class of 97. So this is where I'm going to jump in and say,
okay,
this is, it's report season, quote unquote report season, where people can just put out things that they've heard and sometimes it's unsubstantiated.
Yes.
And this is one of those. So that whole Anthony Lynn business, I heard there was nothing to that.
Like,
so
literally nothing. Yeah. The Deion Sanders stuff, like,
yeah.
I mean, did Reggie Bush mention it on a broadcast? Is he an alumni of the school? Yes. Like, does that have any bearing on USC's actual coaching search?
No.
None. Yeah. Like, negative ghostwriter. None. There's a lot of this. And a little bird once told me, if it's coming from the NFL side, agents are heavily, heavily,
yes,
heavily involved. And they want their client, you know, this is sort of like, you know,
this is open season.
Yes. There's blood in the water. Like, when USC fires their coach in week two, so you have a blue blood college football program, you know, if Ed Orgeron gets the axe, LSU's open. Like, it's open season for agents that are like, I'm trying to get my
client more money.
Yeah. And how do we do this? Now, James Franklin, agent, to be fair, I think he's been really good at this, being able to get him raises and such. But this is one of those things where he's making like $8 million a year, you know? Like, he's not going to – he's basically going to take a pay cut if he would go to USC, because you're not going to get the cost of living increase to be – get like – he's not going to be like a, you know, $13 million a year coach or something at USC.
Yeah.
At least I don't think so. USC spends some money, but I don't think they'd go there. It's more about, hey, this is what we want to do. Would Anthony Lynn want to be the head coach at USC? Likely, I would think. But – no, I don't think there's any, you know, credence to what was going on there. So just because you saw something on Twitter or, you know, I don't think just like you make it as gospel, like, oh, that's the truth. Like, no.
Yeah, we want you to be smart fans. So have your skepticism glasses on. It's very easy for the NFL side of things and the agent side of things to put out reports or put out like whispers of things and reporters will eat it up and send it out. So just be smart, be skeptical and just don't fall for everything. Not fall for everything, but you know.
Yeah. And I would look at, you know, you mentioned Jack Del Rio, Hugh Jackson, Jeff Fisher. Like, David Woods mentions all these guys. It's funny when he goes off. He's like, USC's got to call Jack Del Rio and Jeff Fisher, obviously. And then, I mean, Clancy Pendergast, he was a Super Bowl defensive coordinator, you know, like going through, he just goes through a list of what USC normally would hire, like
the terrible
candidates that USC would normally look at. I don't think you have to worry about that. I know people are got PTSD and they're shell-shocked. I would say, I mean, I don't know how the search is going to go, but I'd be willing to bet a significant amount of money that the person they hire is someone that other people wanted to hire at the time.
Yeah.
USC in the past would hire people that nobody would have hired. Lynn Swann was not going to be hired by anybody for anything. And USC makes him the athletic director. Like, that's the kind of thing. If you want to say, like, well, Jack Del Rio would bring toughness and, like, okay, who would hire Jack Del Rio today to be the head coach anywhere at any level? Like, is anyone trying to, like, is Bowling Green going to call Jack Del Rio and say, hey, well, UConn, they have a head coaching opening? Like, you know, we would look at Jack Del Rio. No. Why? Why would you look at a USC? The only reason is because he played football at USC. That's not the reason a coach is going to get hired this time around.
Yeah.
So kind of get that out of your mind that just because he was at USC once or he played football there does not mean if that's the only reason you're hiring the person, that's gone now. They would not do that anymore.
Which should be a relief for USC fans.
Yes. Relief for me that I don't have to mention the stupidest stuff. Like, stop hiring USC people. Like, I don't have to say that to Mike Bone. I'm like, hey, Mike Bone, don't hire anyone that's ever been at USC. Because he's not going to hire someone just because they've been at USC like other people have.
Yeah. There's a process. There's a whole plan. It's there's strategy. And we can't say that for prior hires. There was a strategy, but not a good one, I would say. Like,
I don't know if it was strategy.
But strategy meaning they went to USC or they had some connection. I guess that's not strategy.
A friend of ours or like...
Yeah, I was tongue-in-cheek saying strategy, but yes.
Strategy and air quotes.
Air quotes, indeed. Okay, we have a question that I feel like will ruffle some feathers.
Depending
on how we answer it.
Okay.
I don't know who sent it, by the way. They say, hey, Parasol Podcast team. This question is for Keely and Ryan. Can we finally admit it to USC fans that the administration needs to stay away from Coach Meyer now after that viral video? He literally had his chance to become such a better person and clean himself up from the personal baggage. Now he pretty much blew that opportunity.
So the Urban Meyer thing and Stuart Mandel and... Bruce Feldman talked about it on their podcast. If you haven't seen the viral video, it's pretty crazy what's going on there. We didn't think that there was going to be an opportunity for Urban Meyer to get hired just from the kind of scandals that USC had around. Now, this is a polarizing topic.
I know.
On the message boards, there's people who are just like, we want Urban Meyer no matter what.
Yeah.
There's some people that were, and I was an advocate of like, dude, just hire the guy. Like, he'll win championships. I'm off that now. Like,
okay.
I'm not, I don't think they're going to hire him, first of all. But if I was the AD, I wouldn't be pursuing it either. And I know there's some USC fans that are going to be pissed about that or whatever. But just from talking to enough people, there's a lot of weird stuff going on there. And I think the ceiling is high because you're talking national championships, like at multiple places. So that's why you would even consider this. I think Brett McMurphy did a piece where he interviewed or surveyed like, you know, most of the athletic directors in Power Five or division, you know, FBS, and 85% of them wouldn't touch Urban Meyer, you know. And I think that's what's going to be happening. I don't think USC was going to consider him anyway.
No.
This sort of makes it easier. In one way, though, it makes it harder because his days in Jacksonville appear to be very numbered. And if he's actually available, like when he was hired, like he was two games in, you're like, he's only two games in. But now it looks like that could blow up and he could be gone, you know?
But why is that attractive? Like, why is that?
Because he's available. That's the only thing. It's like,
sure, but it's like, what is he coming off of? And how is that going to be any different from what USC's done? Yes, he has the track record, but it's a guy coming in from scandals. I mean, he hasn't won a game yet, and his team's losing, and he's staying home and not flying with the team. Like, there's a lot of things there.
This is, I don't know if this is an insensitive analogy, but probably. No, it's like.
I'm nervous, Ryan.
He's the prom queen that you wanted to date when you were in high school and you never got a chance to. And, you know, she went on to great things, and then, like, you know, ends up going to rehab, and it's all like, you know, and just all out of sorts. And now it's like she comes out and, oh, I can date her now, but she's 40 and got three kids, and there's all kinds of problems going on.
Oh my goodness.
She's got a drug problems. This is, you know, but she's still, I remember her being the prom queen, you know, like I remember that. And people remember, you know, winning the championships and all that stuff. He had a lot of problems at the colleges he was at too.
Yes.
The point is he's pretty damaged goods. And I felt like even a few months ago, you know, before he took the Jacksonville job, he was doing a great job on the air, on television. And I felt like that was sort of a rehab for him. You know, like Steve Sarkisian goes to Nick Saban or Lane Kiffin goes to Nick Saban, you kind of get rehabbed. I felt like Fox broadcast stuff, man, he was good. And I felt like that was sort of rehab for all the stuff. And you kind of forget some of the weird coaching stuff that was going on. But this is like all the wounds are reopened now. And it's like even worse. And just his first, like the list of things he's done there, you know, hiring the strength coach that was like, you know, had all his accusations again. I'm like, there were so many things that he had done. I was in, you know, I was like, hey, Urban Meyer, if you could get him, just get him. He'll win. And I am not there anymore. So I don't think the administration's there. We don't know exactly what they're thinking, but no. I know there's some fans that are. But I feel like a lot of the fans have got off that bandwagon too.
He is messy. And I don't think this administration wants to voluntarily inherit mess.
They inherited mess.
Yes. And I don't think they want to
create more.
Yes.
This is one you kind of got to get right, right? Not kind of got it. You have to get it right. And if you, for one second, don't think that in the last 2 years, like every day Mike Bone and Brandon Sasse put their head on the pillow, they were thinking about who the next head coach was going to be at USC. That's their legacy. Like, getting rid of, you know, the UC Davis game, that's nice. You know, like hiring more support staff and, you know, all that stuff. Those are nice things. Those are singles we talked about.
Yep.
This is the chance for the dinger. This is the bottom of the ninth home run the Dodgers hit last night to advance and go on and play the, you know, the Giants. Like, this is the opportunity. You're not going to go after, like, the broken down rehab prom queen. You're going to try to get someone that's the up and coming or established. It's good. Like, doesn't have the you know, the resume of an Urban Meyer, all those positives on the resume, and hopefully doesn't have all those negatives either. So I think that's where we're at.
Yes. I think we covered it.
You got it.
I'm going to move us along. Yes. We got an email from Eric in Duck Country who says, Ryan and Keeley, you often talk about the low-hanging fruit. It's almost like he listens to this podcast.
Were you listening to the live version of this?
Yeah. Every time you said it, I was like, we have a question about this in my mind. Bone and Sasna were able to get an early in their tenure. What low-hanging fruit could a new head coach get? What's a tangible, easy win that would resonate with the fans before even stepping foot on the field? Thanks, Eric in Duck Country.
So, I mean... anything that has to do with toughness, right? Like anything that has to do with, you know, everyone's wearing a tie on the whatever, like discipline, toughness, competitiveness, you know, any of that stuff is going to be low hanging fruit. And we've seen Dante Williams do some of those things.
Yeah.
You know, there's been some that he could do. The extra day of pads, you know.
I think if the coach has a track record of toughness or something credible and comes in and says, look, I've seen what it's been for the last couple of years. We're going to change that. I know it's bad and needs to be better. Just acknowledging the facts, I think it's just going to be a win in itself, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's so easy to win the presser, but I honestly think it's going to be super easy.
Yeah. Because people are going to be like, oh my God, why wasn't USC doing that before? I mean, I'm not saying we're great at our jobs, but there's some things that, like, you're around us enough, you see things and you're like, I told you guys, all you guys, when they finally got an actual athletic director, Mike Bone, I don't know how good he is. Say he's below average as an athletic director. I don't think he is. I think he's above average, but let's say he's below average. He's still so much better than what they had. Like, it was so bad that I told you what was going to happen is he would walk in and look around and go, what the hell is that? And why are you doing that? I mean, I can't tell you how many times I said those things. And I have conversations with people that are like, and that's basically what happened. Like, they came in and like, I can't believe this is happening. Or how could you have been doing that for years and still be successful? So many things like that. And I feel like there's going to be a lot of those with the head coach when they come in and do these things. So, yes, I think the low-hanging fruit. Just being, like Keely said, just being honest. George Klafkov, got to talk to him. Hear him. I love his interviews. He's going to say, like, our distribution for the Pac-12 network is awful. He's going to give, you know, he's not going to say everything. He was like, I like our content. I think we got good shows. I think we have a good product. There's so many, you know, Olympic sports that are doing well. There's a lot of things we can show. Our distribution's bad. The television contract is terrible. I can't fix it until it's up in 2024. And it's just sort of like not, well, I mean, but if people that if they figured out how great those softball broadcasts are, they would sign up for Sling and get it. Like, he's not giving you that bullshit. He's going to say, yeah, it sucks. We need to be better in this, but I can't fix it until this year. And it's just a breath of fresh air.
Yeah.
And I feel like what you were making the point of, you're going to hear a head coach say that, like, our offensive line room is not good enough. Like, there's not, I need tougher guys in there. We're going to clean some players out, and there's going to be, you know, I'm going to test guys, and there's going to be some people that are going to pack it up and leave.
Yeah.
And I'm going to wish them the best, but this is what I want for my team.
Yeah.
There's going to be some stuff like that, and everyone's going to go, wow, you know, like, cool, you know.
Yeah. Like, honestly acknowledging the weaknesses of the program with the tone that you know you can fix it. Like, I think that has been missing, or it's been like kind of bluffed a little bit, but just knowing, hey, these are the problems, but I can take us to point B. You know, I think that will win a lot of people over.
It's hard to say you can fix something if you don't admit it's broke.
Yep.
And if it was a Clay Helton thing, it was a decision he made. I mean, he's fired people, but it's sort of just like,
there's just so much reluctance.
And it's like, you know, like, you don't want to be saying your special teams coach is the best in the country like the week before you fire him, right? Like,
yeah.
That doesn't make any sense, you know?
Or the whole thing about having Tim Drevno as an offensive line coach, even though he hasn't had experience in the air raid, it's not a problem. It's not a problem. And then they get rid of him. They're like, it's a problem. We got Clay Maguire. It's so much better now. It's like, well, you were just spending
the last season telling us
it wasn't.
Yeah. We told you this was a problem.
Yeah.
And like,
yeah.
I mean, again, I'm not saying we're great at our jobs, but there have been so many like high level bad decisions from the athletic department and the head coach that people that are noobs, or not noobs, but just like not Division I college football players or coaches, can see it and go, why do you have an offensive line coach who's like a power guy running the air raid? Like, that's a simple, like, common sense thing. And for whatever reason, the logic for that didn't come into play. And so if we can make those calls, and this isn't hindsight stuff. This was stuff that was said like from the very, like, the moment he was like, we're going to move Tim Drevno over from running backs to offensive line coach. Like, that doesn't make any sense. You got Cliff Kingsbury. Like, you're running it. Like, why would you do that? Like, we said that instantly, you know? And, you know, 2 years later, he's fired. And they're like, well, we want an air raid guy. It's like, yeah, we said this 2 years ago. Like, we don't know what the hell we're talking about. And we said this, you know?
Yeah. I can definitely confirm we don't know what we're talking about. All right, I'm putting us on rapid fire.
Even though this is
tunnel vision. Yeah, but we still have more questions to get into. Let's go to a question from Andrew in Brentwood, who said, even if Jackson Dart can potentially return at the end of the season, can he still be a red or blue shirt to maintain an extra year of eligibility? So blue shirt is actually prior to him getting on campus.
Yeah, there's no blue shirt.
Yeah, no. And technically he can still redshirt if he's already played in one game, so three more games, and then after that his eligibility is burned.
Yeah, so he could redshirt, just depends on, you know, what you do. And it you know, we got one snap out of Miller Moss. Now you have like kind of two backups, so like if they wanted to get one backup or another, and if they maybe they blow out five teams, you could put, if Dart comes back, you could put him for a couple games, you could put Moss in a couple games if you want to. Although no one came in for the
Colorado
game.
Yeah, which I thought was a little odd.
Yeah.
But I guess if you want to save that eligibility for Miller Moss, it makes sense.
It might be that might be the case where they think they're going to get Dart back and he would just not redshirt, you know?
Yeah.
But who knows?
We got a question from Caroline who said, will Brew McCoy be playing for USC this year? So The latest is what we've said continually. It's still under investigation for USC in the Title IX office. That's something where until that takes place and is finished, then there won't be any movement as far as Brew McCoy on the football team. And even then, USC still has to make the determination, the football program, if they still want him back on the team after the investigation is concluded. So given the precedent we've seen from these things before, I would say no.
I would agree with you. And I know it's rapid fire, but quick, Keely.
Yes.
Would USC be having these like problems trying to find a number two guy if Brew McCoy was playing? Like him not being in there, is that significant?
I mean, we said that going forward when it first happened. I mean, he emerged in 2020 as kind of the second guy when Gary Bryant was in and out health-wise. So, yeah, I mean, that is an issue. But, I mean, that's not USC's fault.
No, not at all. And I wouldn't say he's – there was a lot of guys where, like, there's talented guys. Like, oh, Joseph Manjack, he's great. Like, all these dudes. But no one's really sort of stepped up. Like, Gary Bryant's got touchdowns the last three games, right? But
yeah.
No one stepped up and been the number two. I think – I'm not saying McCoy would be guaranteed to be a number two, but he would have had the best shot to be like more of, you know, I guess have the trust of Keaton Slovis earlier on.
Yeah, it's definitely a loss for USC in that sense, but we said that from the start. We got a question from Patrick who said, hi, you mentioned last week that Dante Williams found out that he was going to be the interim coach shortly before the 2 p.m. team meeting last Monday. This is from a couple weeks ago. Did Bone talk to Todd Orlando or Graham Harrell to let them know they wouldn't be the interim? Are you allowed to say no to being the interim, or is that something that just wouldn't happen due to the competitive nature of being a coach at this level? I'm not ever going to be a part of hiring and firing college football coaches, so I'm curious about any sort of insight you might have into how the sausage gets made. Thanks and fight on, Patrick. So my understanding was that when Dante Williams was given the associate head coach promotion between, I believe it was 2020 and 2021, it came with the understanding that if there were to be a change, Dante would get the promotion.
Oh.
That's my understanding. But I do think that not everyone on the staff was aware of that. So I think there's a little bit of tension in the beginning because of that. But, I mean, I think, like we said, USC really wanted to keep it under wraps and make sure that the players heard first from them rather than media reports. And so in order to do that, the only people that knew prior to informing the players were Helton and, Dante Williams. So, no, I don't think they were
Graham
informed.
Graham Harrell didn't know and Todd Orlando didn't know.
Yeah, I don't think they were informed. So
I think they all found out like about the same time.
But yeah,
they wanted Dante to know, obviously, like, hey, do you want to, like, and as far as saying no, like, I mean, I guess you could. I don't know why you would. It's
kind of like it's obviously a resume builder. Like especially he hasn't been the coordinator before. So if you can put on your resume, hey, I was the interim head coach for 10 games at least for USC, helps you out.
No, yeah, like, I mean, you're flying from New York to LA and you're a coach in a middle seat and they go like, you went first class? It's just to the end of the flight. Okay. Like, I mean, like, like, why would you not do that?
That's,
you
know, a good, I actually like that analogy. Hold on. We got a question from Rick in La Mirada who said, curious as to the head coach, did the Oregon State loss hurt Dante or hurt USC's search more? How many recruits are watching, thanking themselves for choosing another school? And how bad does it hurt as first signing day isn't far away? Last thing you want to hear is the transfer portal for few elites that think they made the unwise choice. What can fix this? Every facet of play seems to be step forward and three steps back. Sorry for the long question. I just want to fight on. Stay healthy and safe, Rick in La Mirada.
Rick, I don't think it's a long question. It's a series of short questions. Like,
it's
like
one of the shorts
this,
we got.
This, yeah. That's true. We got a lot of long ones. I don't think you have to worry about the recruiting class and all that kind of stuff. The most important thing is hiring the head coach. Like, if you're going to hire a coach because of the recruiting class, that's, you're doing the wrong thing. They're not going to focus on that. Now, you would like to get something. They know the timeline. You would like to get someone as early as possible. But if they have to wait a little longer to get the right guy, that they would do that, you know. And if you can make some sort of announcement before the person comes on, having Dante Williams there to keep the recruiting class together, all that stuff, I think is helpful. But I wouldn't worry too much about that, Rick. It's the number one thing, the number two thing, the number three thing, the number four thing is hiring the right head coach. That's what the focus should be.
Yep. We got a question from Steve in San Diego, and I'm going to paraphrase his question. Basically, He expressed doubt about USC's training staff, the medical staff, and we've mentioned it before, I think even at the start of this podcast, about, you know, the issues with Port Augustine and Solomon Tulile Pupu. And he said he thinks it'll take longer than what is expected for Jackson Dart to return based on the fact that USC's medical staff has a iffy history.
I mean, I am no medical expert on some of the,
No, we are not.
We don't know. Like, I don't know how long it's going to take. But we're seeing, like, we saw him fairly quickly walking around. Like, if you didn't know he was hurt, he looked fine. Now, he wasn't going to be able to plant stuff.
I mean, he still had a little bit of gimp in the walk.
Yeah, but it was like, you know, for the most part, like, if you, it looked like he could have banged his toe for all we knew. he's put pads on now. So we'll see. I mean, I think we're going to know a lot more after the bye week and come out and see that first practice for Notre Dame. Is he out there? In full pads, is he practicing? But I wouldn't worry too much, Steve. I mean, I mean, he's the backup quarterback still. So,
yeah.
And maybe you want him to play, but this is sort of like those things. Like, he got hurt. It's all about just, you just got to take your time no matter what now.
Mm-hmm. We had two emails, one before the Oregon State loss and after, from Dan, class of 1962. So the first one before the Oregon State loss, he was saying, hey, let's give Dante Williams a chance. And then the second one, he said, I'm sorry for being too optimistic and saying giving Dante Williams a chance. So he wanted to know, is that still an option, or do you just need to clean house? And we got multiple questions addressing that, so I'm kind of all combining them into one.
Really? Dan, like, no, you got to clean house. Like,
oh, sorry. No, Dan specifically said, Ryan, you were so right about the complete house cleaning and replacement with a proven quality head coach that is needed.
Oh, okay.
But someone else wanted to know. I combined them. My bad.
Yeah,
sorry,
no problem. That's fine. There's way too much overreaction to some of this stuff. Or, like, they beat Washington State. Like, Dante Williams should get a chance. Like, I mean, I like Dante Williams, but I was saying, no, he shouldn't. Like, he's never been a head coach before. And then you were like, well, what if? Yeah. What if he wins all his games and, like, wins the national championship? Sure, give him the head coaching job. That ain't going to happen. He lost the next week. You know?
That's why we said pause. Like, get to this problem when we get there.
Right. USC's done this before. Don't make the same mistake again. Don't hire the guy that you like because you know him and he's there. Like, that's what you like about Dante Williams. Now, Dante Williams, to his credit, is a much more accomplished assistant coach than Clay Helton was. Clay Helton wasn't the play calling offensive coordinator. Clay Helton wasn't a great quarterback coach by all measures. He wasn't he was fine. He seemed to be fine at all those things. But when you're going to hire, like, your offensive coordinator, you want it to be Lincoln Riley. You want it to be one of the best offensive coordinators in the country that nobody can stop their offense. Like, that wasn't Clay Helton. Dante Williams, you know, you can argue how good of a cornerbacks coach or whatever he is, but he's clearly an elite recruiter. Like, he does something extremely well, which is better than you could say. Clay Helton's thing he did extremely well was not, you know, bring scandals to university, which I guess that was something good because USC needed that. But Dante Williams at least has something elite. You know, like, sometimes you're playing a team and you're like, you know, defense is not that good. They're especially not good, but you know, they can't really run the ball. They're an elite passing team, man. They're top five in the country at passing. Like, they do something better than most. And Dante Williams recruits better than most. So he at least has that feather in his cap, but that's not enough to become the head coach at USC right now. They have to get someone who's been there and done that. Not an offensive coordinator from the NFL. None of that stuff. Get a proven head coach. That's my thought.
Yes. Moving us along.
Yeah.
Alex in Chicago wanted to know, based on what you just said too, his recruiting ability, if USC hires a new head coach out of the season, can Dante Williams stay at USC? Could that create a divided loyalty between players? Would the new coach have to get rid of Dante Williams to establish his own authority over the program? Would love to hear your thoughts and insights.
I think if you hire the next head coach at USC, it's going to be an alpha. It's going to be someone, and you haven't seen that at USC, really, since Pete Carroll. It's going to be so. Do you think Pete Carroll would have cared if, you know, Ed Orgeron, people were loyal to Ed Orgeron? Ed Orgeron was a great recruiter. He kept them. They're going to be loyal to the program. They're going to be loyal to Pete. Pete Carroll does not worry about, oh, the players are going to follow Ed Orgeron and not me. Because Pete Carroll's like, I'm the freaking head coach and I'm going to run this show. And whoever the head coach is going to come in and say the same damn thing. And if he's like, I think Dante Williams fits on my staff, every player in the locker room loves Dante Williams. he's not going to bother the new head coach. Like, that's not going to be a thing. If it is, then you got the wrong guy. Like, if you're worried about, you're like, well, that guy's going to be loyal to me, or he's going to be like, no, that's stupid stuff. And so, no, I don't think that's going to be a problem at all.
Alrighty, we have one last question.
Okay.
And it's from Don. He sent in multiple questions about Corey Foreman. So he wanted to know, why isn't Corey Foreman playing more? And he said, during the recruiting period, people made it sound like Corey was ready for the NFL. What are you seeing in practice that would make you not want to play him? USC has a terrible D-line and Corey can't be a starter. What gives, Don? So that's the thing. Corey hasn't been practicing consistently, or wasn't in the beginning of the season. And there were talk about injury issues, mental toughness issues, playbook issues, all of the above a little bit. So that's what basically, if you read between the lines of what Todd Orlando and Vic Soto say in their post-practice media availability, they're basically saying they need consistency from him. They need him to practice. And that's kind of the how things are going under Dante Williams, is you got to practice, and you got to practice consistently in order to get that shot at playing time. And Corey is playing. He got a good amount against Colorado, yeah. But I don't think it's been the plug and play that people expected him to be right off the bat. So
5-star players, fans gravitate towards them, especially when USC doesn't have as many of them now. He looks the part. He's a stud. He's got a higher ceiling than most people on the team. That doesn't mean he's plug and play and he can just go in there and be an every down defensive end. And he's just not right now. And some of that's just, you know, when we saw George Farmer come in, 5-star receiver from Sarah, and Marquise Lee in the same class, George Farmer was the more established player, you know, but he had a harder time transitioning to college. And there's different rules. There's different aspects of what's going on. Marquise Lee had a pretty rough, you know, childhood, and just he seemed to just he needed that kind of structure that you got in college and the extra freedom and all that. Like, he thrived as soon as he got to USC. And that's just, you know, part of it. Like, you got to figure it out. It's a whole different lifestyle, high school to college. There's different expectations upon you. It's a lot different. And you feel like the fact that he's out there playing some, Don, you shouldn't be discouraged by that. That's great that he's playing some. We've seen some guys have to come in and just redshirt, and it takes a little bit longer. Just because he's not an every down starting defensive end as soon as he walks on campus doesn't mean he's a bust or whatever. Like, he's got to figure out him in college, and they're expecting him to get out there and practice as hard as everybody else. And if he's not doing that right now, or he's banged up and he can't practice as much, he's not going to play as much. And if he doesn't know the playbook as well, or can't be a run stopping guy, or play on first and second down, he's more of a pass rusher, that's what they're going to use him as. And doesn't mean he's not going to get there. You're 5 games into his career, so I wouldn't worry too much.
Yeah, I agree with what you said.
All righty. Well, I guess it's going to wrap things up.
How long did we go, Mr. Abraham?
This is an hour and 26 minute mark.
Woo!
This is a lot. I had some talkings going on.
Yeah, we both did.
You did at the beginning.
We took turns.
And I sort of
podcasting
talked a lot.
Duo. That's what we do.
We do a little bit of that. I know. I thought, I'll have plenty of time to get ready for Tunnel Vision. Not as much time as I was
thinking.
Ooh,
yeah, okay.
I still got to do that.
So much talking.
But, hope you guys all enjoyed the show. And thanks for the reviews. Thanks for the questions. Really appreciate you guys writing in and all that.
Sticking around.
Sticking around. It's fun. Hope you guys have fun with this.
We like hearing from you guys.
We
do. Sure.
Hope you like the advanced stats and all of that. And, we'll get back to you guys soon. Hopefully not late or early Sunday morning if I'm doing a podcast early Sunday morning.
Stop jinxing us, Ryan.
You don't have to do that, or you're up to it.
Well, no, I'm just saying. I maybe just you're summoning the emergency podcast is all I'm saying.
It would be cool. Like, I did a third. No,
oh,
it would be cool.
Goodness.
I don't want to do that. People are like,
here we
like
go.
Up at 4 a.m. Like, yeah, I know, whatever. Okay, well, hopefully, guys, see you at the tailgate. Enjoy the game if you're at the Coliseum or whatever. Oh, real quick, you do have to if you're gonna be at the Coliseum, you need proof of vaccination or.
Yes.
Negative COVID test within 72 hours. So that's a change. That's an LA County thing for mass gatherings. So make sure you do that if you go into the game. That's something different. I know people were talking about on the boards. But hopefully if you're coming, come by the tailgate. We posted all that on the Peristyle. It's a pinned post on uscfootball.com. But that's Keely Orr. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thanks for tuning in. And hope you enjoyed the show. And we will talk to you next time.
You may have noticed that shopping at Trader Joe's is unlike shopping at other markets. People ask us all the time how we manage to have such unique, interesting, and delicious products at such great everyday prices. This is Dan Bain of Trader Joe's. The answer is simple. It's all in the way we do business. We buy directly from the manufacturer whenever possible. This helps to keep our costs low, and we pass those savings on to you. No gimmicks, just great values at honest prices every day at Trader Joe's. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. Don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has three episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.